It didn't. There, now we're live. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Role Play Swan Songs recap episode. It's been 39 months, weeks. It's been a long time.
Years.
This is the first time I've done a show in a while, double, like back to back. So I'm pretty exhausted right now because I get up really early. So I'm basically be checked out for most of this episode. But luckily,
we've got like the usual Swan Song.
Yeah,
episode.
So
kinda.
We're right back where we've been.
Kinda. This one's actually mentally exhausting, though. Anyways, this is a recap episode because we've been live for 39 months, weeks, still messing that up. And it occurred to me that some people might have just, like, stopped watching the show because for a while we were pretty frequent there. We were doing shows pretty much every week for, like, at least 6 months.
Mm. How long in time from the starting episode to now has it been?
Like human time, so our first
human time,
human time.
Did you already track that, Adam, or I can look? I can look.
Well, air date of the very first episode is the 7th of July, 2014.
Damn, dude, a year and a half. God,
yeah. 2 years in July. Yeah,
holy shit.
She flies.
It's true.
How did I stand all you guys for that long, and how did you stand me for that long?
Well, I think the real question is, Wheat. Mm-hmm. The realest of all questions is how are Wilbur and Piani the two characters that are still there from episode one?
Yeah,
right?
I think that is one of the many questions that will be answered tonight here on Swan Song Recap.
There you go. And now cue the quick zoom in to Adam's face because Adam's kind of running the show. The rest of us have an idea of what we're going to be talking about. We also pulled you guys for questions, and you guys helped out huge in the sense of we have about 180. We're obviously not going to get to all of those. We probably won't even get to 20 of those because we like to talk a lot.
That's true.
And I kind of think, typically we would start off and just talk about what we've been up to and stuff like that, but let's just skip it. I don't want to talk for an hour then do a two-hour recap episode. Let's just talk about Swan Song.
We'll
save that for next show whenever that happens, which we'll talk about later. Because we already discovered that it might be a while, actually.
39 months from now.
Yeah.
Go ahead and put Swang in the old Disney vault. And
exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, I figured we could just hang out. And, I mean, there are a lot of fans of Swan Song, right? There are people who watched every episode and people who checked us out on YouTube and folks who've tweeted us fan art and done all kinds of cool stuff for the show. But really, when it comes down to it, I feel like the biggest fans of the show are us, right? Like, we're the ones who – we may not get a lot of time to step back from it and kind of be like, oh, yeah, that was really cool. You know, it's usually like, all right, be your character. Play your character for 4 hours. Okay, now go have a nap. You know, but this is a really nice example of an opportunity for us to just like hang out and talk about cool stuff that has happened in the show and, you know, where our characters are at and how we feel about, how the game has gone so far. It's a thing that a lot of the time I think people who are playing role-playing games don't really think to do, but it's helpful. It's nice to like sit down and, you know, like work through this stuff because there's lots of, I'm sure, like, unanswered questions like, why did your character do that? That was crazy. Or did anyone actually like Prosper, for example?
Answer.
Aww.
No. Answer. No.
No. Also, like, I don't really look at too many of, because I live and breathe these shows in the sense that I'm actually, once I do a show, we're like, we're done with it and it's in my head. But the wiki for this shit isn't, I haven't looked at this wiki in probably.
It's amazing.
Probably 6 months.
Wild.
What, like, who the fuck does this shit? I don't even know who's responsible for that. I don't even know who to thank. Like, this is insane. I think decked out for everything.
I think Zunilar does a lot with it. Wisawell does a bunch on the wiki. Like, that's a couple of people who've done a lot for the West Marches wiki. And I think it's the same group or a similar group as the ones who do the Swan Song wiki. It's awesome.
There's 222 fucking pages on this wiki.
I mean, this is the thing. Someone, and this is kind of on the same parallel for me, where somebody mentioned to me on Twitter the other day, they were like, so, and I may get the numbers wrong, but the gist of it is the same. They were like, so, I checked, and the entire run, every single episode of Star Trek The Next Generation amounts to about 130 hours of content. Swan Song, you beat them by 10.
Damn, nice. You guys.
Hold on, repeat that. Who did we beat by 10?
Star Trek The Next Generation.
We've officially done
more hours.
Wow.
Yeah. It was more content.
I was looking at what? I think I was looking at the West Marches, and you know how like in Roll20 they tell you how many hours you've played of this game? hang on, where is it? Oh, no, this is me. I have played 929 hours on Roll20.
What, do you just leave it on there, you fucking cheater? Like, we haven't played that. It's like a steep count. I can actually tell you how long we've played in the past 401 days, and that is 119 hours.
Yeah, so there's an amazing amount of content, which is the whole kind of purpose of this show, right, is the reason we're sitting here today, is because if you're coming in and you're like, man, I really liked this one episode of the West Marches I happened to catch, and I watched, you know, JP's regular streams, I don't want to get into another role play, and people are going to be like, you should watch Swan Song, because it's awesome, and everybody's like funny and great, and it's dramatic. And then you're like, cool, I don't presently have 119 hours to just, you know, hang out and watch it. And if you do, thank you, we love you. But, you know, it'd be nice to hang out and, yeah, and talk about, you know, kind of where the show's at and what got us to the point we're at. Because I think that what develops as you play a role-playing game with the same people long enough, whether you've got the same characters or rotating characters through, you develop this sort of internal language, right? You refer to things without having to continually remind each other what those things are. Like when I say, you know, you see an agent of the Madari Syndicate, we're all like, okay, cool, yep.
I mean, I don't even know what that means, to be honest.
I mean, the people who
means they speak Chinese. They speak Mandarin.
Yeah, right. It's that.
They speak pianis.
I got to be 100% honest. Once we started doing drop frames on the same day, this show is very, very hard for me to stay 100% in.
Which I am mentally. A lot.
The thing is it works so well for the character.
Yep.
I'm just like, you know, I don't feel that bad.
Yeah, you got to play to your strengths, right? It's true. Like, you know, there's a you watch everybody actually, like we, Steven, Jeff, JB, everybody, like people have certain characters that they like to play because of the way they want to play the game. Sometimes that's just like, I'm going to play a character who's a little bit addled because I can't keep this shit straight, which is totally valid. So
Trister, from your community, Adam, tweeted at me earlier today about the play that I did on Misclicks last night. Yeah. And how I was just kind of, I think she was talking about watching Swan Song, and as like I just got progressively crazier and crazier.
Yeah. I noticed that too, by the way, bro.
And I realized that is literally like my player brand in role playing games is playing crazy characters who just make shit weirder for the other players, and then
until they die,
and everybody has to sort of deal with it. Yeah, exactly.
That's why I was making the joke after Prosper, where I was like, "You're getting weird, man. I can see Steven's departure already."
Get weird, get dead.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, and so this shared language of not only in fiction stuff, but, and I mean, every role-playing group is going to end up with these where we'd laugh and make jokes about stuff that if you didn't catch the original episode that it happened in, you'll never, there were so many questions on that forum that were like, what's with the stairs? Why do you keep making jokes about stairs?
Yeah, I mean, that's a terrible inside joke.
What is Randied?
Terrible inside joke.
I'm saying in the sense that it's like, it's terribly inside joke. Like
it's arcane,
yeah,
for sure.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And really, that's what in a lot of ways drives, I think, the fan base for the show too. Like people who watch the show and who have stuck with it for a long time, they're the ones that are like, the stairs, I get it, because stairs, and you're dead at the bottom, and it's funny.
Yep.
Yeah.
Also,
for anyone wondered, stairs are because Prosper...
Victor Kovacs.
Victor Kovacs fell downstairs... and died because
I got shot in the head before falling down the stairs.
Yeah, you were
the stairs didn't kill him, but it's a returning joke because someone made fan art, and I think this is where it came up. Someone made fan art of the character at the bottom of the stairs, and then we kept bringing it up. I think Jeff was one that kept bringing it up.
I was going to say it was Jeff
of like going back into the world and like seeing Victor Kovacs there with like a rat living in its head, and then someone made fan art of that. I think the same person did.
Yes.
And so it's just existed as like Victor's body is still there on this
fucking
planet.
Still moldering at the bottom of the stairs where he fell. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that joke in particular, and you know, I want to get through the joke thing, and then I'd like to just like talk about everybody's characters in the world at large kind of before we get into individual episode stuff. But that joke in particular I found funny because it was very much an emergent property of the way that Jeff tends to poke fun at other people during the show, and the fact that Steven is so easy to make fun of during the show.
That's
so
true.
It worked out so great.
My personal brand.
Yeah.
Yeah. As and well as it. The other one is the people probably always wonder this, and I'm sure it was a question, but the fully semi-automatic thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, that gets referenced a shit ton, and it's because Steven's an idiot.
And that's... Steven and Adam had an awesome conversation.
So we had an argument about, whether semi-automatic and automatic were the same thing.
Yeah.
There's two DMs, which is my favorite part about it. Cause you get
oh,
like,
man.
No, because... We were trying to figure out if my gun could burst fire, and I was like, yes, and Adam was like, no, and then it was like, is it automatic or semi-automatic? Yeah,
it's semi-automatic, right?
It's fully semi-automatic.
Was that with Victor, or was that with...
that was Victor. Victor was fully semi-automatic.
It was Victor's sniper pistol.
That's right. Okay, I remember.
Yeah, so these are the kinds of things that accrue. This is the crust. These are the barnacles that form on the ship as we play the game. So, if you are watching this as your introduction to Swan Song in general, let's talk a little bit about the overarching premise of the setting. And I want to reintroduce all the characters that are current to the show, because I think that we have a tendency to just imagine what our characters are like or what they look like and forget that, tuning in week to week, it might get blurry. Like, even I imagine, for the most part, a lot of the time, just like a modified version of the person playing as their character, right? Like, it's hard to create a mental image of that stuff. So I'd love to just like talk about like what class your character is and what do they look like and talk about their background and stuff and just kind of reintroduce ourselves to the characters. Because for me, the crew of the ship is what Swan Song really is about, right? Like, whoever it might be, because the crew comes and goes, but the people that are on board the ship is what really will kind of make the ship go. So the setting of Swan Song, when we originally started talking about Swan Song as a show and kind of what we wanted to do with it, I was looking at using Stars Without Number because that's the role-playing game that we're playing. It's a really like easy game to do a lot of cool stuff with. So you can do a pastiche of all kinds of sci-fi. And if you've been watching the show for a long time, you'll know that Swan Song picks bits and pieces from really most sci-fi out there. There's episodes that feel a little like Aliens, and there's episodes that feel like Cowboy Bebop, and there's episodes that feel like Blade Runner, and that's what I think has been so fun about the game, is that as we move from place to place, we're getting like a little bit of Warhammer here with some of Mr. Sicarian stuff, and then we're going to go over here, and we're going to do some kind of like street-level cyberpunk stuff, and we get to kind of explore everything about sci-fi through this big open universe. And the kind of core premise in the game is that it's set in the year 3200. Humanity had in the past gone out into the universe and settled all these colonies by way of this sort of technology called jump gates. And these jump gates, like in Cowboy Bebop, let you move from place to place through essentially like a constructed wormhole. But then something horrible happened on Earth. And all of the psychics in the setting, because psychic powers are a thing that people developed, they all kind of combusted all at once, and it caused massive technological failure everywhere. The jump gates all fell apart, and where we're at now, after this event called the Scream, is this sector of loosely connected laneways. Basically, it's a very kind of like Frontiers-y feel. We may have faster than light travel, but we don't have faster than light communication. So you're still basically picking up messages and moving them from one world to another, which is why if you watch the show, sometimes, someone will say, well, I want to send a message to Calliopea. And I'm like, well, she's on the other side of the sector, so you can send it and I'll tell you when she calls you back. But there's a distance amount of travel there. And so what ends up in this is happening in the setting is we have all these sort of factions that have developed. Some of them are planetary governments, some of them are science concerns, some of them are religions, and they've built up in the sector. The sector is a loose connection of planets, and the Swan Song, the ship that the show is named after, is crewed by a handful of folks who are just basically trying to like make it in this kind of frontiersy kind of anarchistic space. After the apocalypse of having lost all this like magnificent technology in the past, and Earth is some faraway story that people tell their kids or crazed Germans go after, but for the most part, you're kind of stuck with what you got. And so, a big part of the show, and something that I think is interesting that's developed over time, is that the ship itself is really kind of the main character. Like, characters come and go, but what really matters is that they're the crew of this ship, which is, has created some unique opportunities for us to watch characters come and go, and some unique tensions about, like, uh-oh, what if the swan song gets blown up because somebody rolled a real bad navigation roll? So it's been an interesting campaign in that way, just looking at kind
Which
of
totally
what,
possible, by the way.
Yeah, completely possible.
Yeah, it's true.
It's been really interesting looking at kind of how it's different than, you know, the way that we normally have role-playing games that are, like, really about the characters. And if a particular character leaves, then it's like, well, what are you going to do, right? And so right now, the crew of the Swan Song is in a particular form, but it's, you know, it's changed over time. And I'm absolutely certain that as we move through the game, and we you know, we do another 40 weeks of shows, that we'll see that that cast rotate. We'll see the characters leave and have other characters come in and join the crew. Right now, there's two people that have been with the Swan Song since way back when. Her illegitimate captain, and the ship's psychic. So, I mean, why don't we start there? Like, I would love to just get both an idea of, like, talk a little bit about what your character is like now, kind of like where, if you picked up on episode 40 and, you know, and saw your character, kind of where they're at, what they're thinking about, why they're with the ship, but then also kind of, I would love to hear how you've seen the character, how you feel the character has changed since the first episode, right? Because, you know, Higgs and Piani have been a long time on the ship, and I feel like I have some ideas about how they've changed, but I'd love to see how you feel about that.
I don't feel like either character has changed at all.
Are you kidding me?
Maybe I'm speaking for myself, but I feel like there have been facets that have been explored that weren't there initially because I just didn't know that I knew that that character was going to be that, but I still think Higgins is the same person that he was the first time I spoke.
Well, maybe it's that each character has personality traits that have remained constant, right? Like Piani's always the angry MES psychic. But you know, I'll go first. I'll just kind of throw this out here because definitely, you know, I guess like when Swan Song first started, you're kind of thinking, okay, space adventure, you know, you're just what kind of character would be fun to go in and do this from. And obviously everyone knew that I would, because we needed obviously equal opportunity ship. So we needed a female on the ship.
Then you always play females.
And I always play females. And it just so happened that, you know, at that point, everyone, you know, wasn't a psychic. So I'm like, okay, perfect. This is stereotypical me. And then, you know, I was like, I want to have fun because I want to sort of be that, you know, sort of angry, tough, but not really that tough, you know, like crewmate. And I think the early episodes are very indicative of just that. I mean, we were talking earlier about like some of the flares and, you know, I bought a bunch of thermal flares and I just, you know, tried to kind of like throw them into the mix more to add chaos than anything. But what I wouldn't have expected in the world of Swan Song and how I feel like Piani really has changed in that if you look at Piani's backstory, it really is a like, my family abandoned me, my planet abandoned me, I have absolutely fucking nothing. So, you know, fuck all that shit, and my life is basically whatever I make of it, where I am and where I exist at that moment. And obviously, like, the crew is just people you work with. But I think what happened is with the introduction of Pi, who, of course, I'm sure we're going to talk plenty about, that kind of not only for me, and Adam's talked about how I was able to relate with that because I am a father and I definitely looked at it from that perspective, but how that changed for Piani is that she went from like a, I actually don't give that much, like if Higgins or Sakarian or anyone would have died, Victor in like the first few episodes, it wouldn't have been that big deal, to, you know, moments where like I personally was upset at some of the actions of the crewmates because it affected what Piani then envisioned as her family. And Pi was kind of the catalyst for that. So Piani definitely started this as, you're just three people that I have to deal with making a dollar on the ship, to like, I feel like these people are all I really have in this galaxy, and they are my family, and that's been sort of demonstrated, I think, through the departure of a few of our players, but then also the retention attempts at some of our players. There you go.
So what, just from like a purely sort of like game perspective, so Piani, obviously your class, you're the psychic of the party. What were your training and background that you took for your character? Do you remember what those are?
So back when
you like originally made your character, because every character in Stars Without Number has a background, so like
right.
their upbringing, and then something they were trained for, so like some okay. something like, I know some of yes. these, like I remember some of the characters, but I don't remember all of them. Do you remember what yours were, Piani?
I think I wrote it down. Yeah, my background was communications crew, which mm-hmm. of course made sense because I wanted to be beneficial to the crew overall. And then my training was criminal mind, because the backstory was essentially, because family, I didn't really have much family. It was the criminal element that allowed me to live on Madrid and then basically – or Majid and then basically escape from Majid.
Right. And then your like psychic training was criminal mind, right, which gave you your
– Yes.
Your talents. Okay. Cool. So I mean that's the other question about – and this comes up constantly because the first thing most people notice about Piani is the accent, right? Right. And I think we had like a long conversation about this early on.
Did you start episode one with that accent?
Some yeah. variation of it, okay. you know, but like I'm not one who's going to fucking give up. And so maybe it wasn't the smartest idea to go into the show, but obviously it's like added character to who Piani is and how she is as a character. Yep. So I just keep going Piani, with it. And accent. I guarantee you we have breaks and her accent changes and it is, you know.
I definitely remember when we started Mirror Shades, the first few episodes of both shows kind of around the same time. We were like,
they were about 2 weeks apart. Yeah.
Hang on. You can do it. You can keep your accent straight.
Right.
Well, and it's interesting too, because I think that it speaks to how kind of multicultural the universe is, right? Is that Piani is a character from a planet predominantly populated by people of Chinese descent, but she herself isn't. And the planet itself originally was like an Arabic colony world. So there's a lot of like layering of this stuff, and it's added some interesting stuff. I definitely know that in character, in universe, people have been like, "Where is she from?" Yeah. So I think that like what's interesting too is watching how Piani has developed both, because obviously like the main point, like you said, was watching Piani develop around the NPC of Pi, because in a lot of ways, especially early on, Pi was pretty much me giving you like wait something to interact with that I thought would be interesting to you as a player, and has, you know, grown beyond that. But I also think for me what's been really fascinating is watching your relationship with Higgs particularly change over time. And I don't know, I want to ask you this. So Piani seems to get attached to characters that maybe she shouldn't get attached to. Like Pi, there've definitely been episodes where I've seen Piani be like, maybe I shouldn't love this robot as much as I do. Or like the whole thing with Mr. Sicarian when he left the crew, you know, that like Piani was very upset about that. And it's interesting watching that stuff happen. And is that something that you had sort of anticipated for Piani when you first started making your character?
Absolutely not. And to your point, I want to talk about when Miss Sicarian left the crew, because I was just mentioning this to someone today, that was the only moment in my entire existence on this earth and role playing at any time where not only was I as a person like emotionally upset that this was happening, but that my character, it just was also emotionally upset that this was happening. And like never in a million years, it doesn't matter Swan Song or Mirror Shades or any, would I ever have imagined that I would get that attached, not only to like the crew, but it's seriously, it's like It was like being a fifth grader and your best friend was like moving away for sixth grade. That's how it felt. And, you know, I remember that episode like it was yesterday, and I remember how pissed off I was. And you can go back and watch that episode and you can see it on my face. And that to me,
you were like, the most emotional about all of that. Yeah,
I was not even character, just as a person. You know, I mean, imagine like. It's silly because obviously it was like a Mr. Sakarian moment, but like to be the selfish crew member, imagine the moment where you're like, fuck yeah, victory. This is something that like, you know, my friend has been aspiring to do. And now because of his success, we're going to rip him away from you. And it's like, first off, for me, we didn't fucking know that was going to happen, right? Yep, like it would have been totally different.
Yeah, no one knew.
If before the show is like, okay, this could be last show for Mr. Sakarian, but that shit hit me hard, man, right in the feels, dude, right in the feels. So for me, it's like not only one of the defining moments, but to answer your question, Adam, like, no, I didn't expect any of that stuff. And, you know, I mean, particularly, and I just want to say one more thing about Pi. And how what I didn't expect is that, you know, Pi, which you really treated literally like a child, is that people don't understand how difficult that actually was, because having grown up with that babe and been like, you know, like, oh my gosh, you gotta like gotta hold him a certain way, or you're gonna like break him, and you know, like it, like that cautious parent, that all came back again, and it was like, if I just say one bad thing, maybe Adam does make this robot like. Totally kill everyone. So I think that the fear of Adam and the whole fear of being a parent again came back into one, and you can see there's definitely apprehension.
I think that's every parent fears that their child would become a super intelligent murderous entity, but thankfully most of us don't have to worry about those kinds of things.
So I didn't expect it, and I love it.
Yeah, and I think that's something that has been really interesting for me and for viewers coming in and watching, you know, their first episodes, if they haven't seen all of this stuff develop, you know, like Piani didn't start off being the kind of emotional center of the group. She was definitely the kind of like you said, like kind of the firecracker, kind of the like chaos instigator early on. You know, and she's developed. There's been a lot of character change. One character that JP, you claim Higgs hasn't changed, but I have some.
I don't feel like Higgins has changed. Well, go ahead and.
Let's talk about this. So tell us the dynamic with him,
because we now know he's a part of an organization. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, so give us the rundown. Tell us about what Higgs is like today, and I want to talk a little bit about a few moments throughout the show, and I want to know if these are things that you kind of had in mind. Early on is what Higgs was like, or if they just in the moment came up and you're like, yep, no, I'm just going to do this, and Higgs has been clear to you.
Well,
that
the Higgs answer is that they were all planned.
Of course, right. Well, that's the ongoing thing. So Higgs, his background is
was bounty hunter and con man, which
right.
He still lives up to con man. I forgot that he was ever a bounty hunter background. So mm-hmm. I guess maybe I'll work that into it.
So next episode will be really fun.
Higgs is wearing a jetpack.
I don't know where it. When did we do Apocalypse World? Because Higgs is basically.
It has
a lot to do with Bubba, which was a character that we did in Apocalypse World, which Steven GM'd and which we played with, and Maggie was the other player.
For folks who both watched Apocalypse World and are going to be watching Swansong or have watched it, what's interesting is that it wouldn't be that hard for Higgs to be a literal descendant of that character, given that Earth, being so far away, has undergone like several apocalyptic events.
Yeah, maybe that's canon.
They could very easily be in the same universe.
The Easter egg,
that.
Yes.
Yep, totally. Yeah. Yes.
And so it started out with that because the accent was just so fun to do for that character, and I had so mm-hmm. much fun. Not because, like, well, I mean, a little bit because the character was just fucking crazy, but also because, like, the voice is just fun to do, and it's easier for me to just roll into that accent on a whim, and I feel like I do it kind of truthfully to how it actually sounds living in Texas. Sometimes it's a little bit bad when I'm real tired and start slurring. And then it turns into Zanzel sometimes, so that's even more annoying.
Still Texas a little bit.
Yeah, still Texas a little bit.
Texan Zanzel.
But I think in terms of like where he started, he was a pretty like vanilla character up until I would say
the end of episode one when he shot a guy in the head.
Randy.
So that's okay.
Up until right. Randy.
Right.
That might, you know, that might have been the turning point for me as a player when I was just like, I'm bored.
Well, fuck
and
it.
This happens a lot of times with characters. I do a lot of things where I'm just like, this is boring. Like, I'm bored. I wanted to have some fun happen. And that was probably the Randy moment at the end of episode one.
This is boring. We're at the end of a space fucking police chase with the vehicles shooting and plasma cannons.
Can we just talk about what happened in episode one? We went to a motel to pick up something, and we set a blanket on fire to try and create a distraction.
Yeah.
And then we drove away, and we got into a police chase along the freeway.
So what's so great about doing these things? Because I you know, in knowing we were going into the recap episode, I read through all the wiki stuff. I watched a couple of bits and pieces from early episodes. And what's so interesting is how uncertain we all are about, like, the universe. We have the proper nouns down, right? We're like, okay, you're on a planet. It's called Andoni. You're working for the Richardson Scientific Organization. There's some stuff happening. And now looking back at it, we have all of this additional context. We're like, oh, like Calliopea, she's a product, that whole arc, she's a product of episode one of you shooting Randy. And what's so cool is seeing that stuff in context now. So like you were saying, Steven, basically it was just a normal kind of like mission, right? Like you were picking something up and smuggling it off the planet. And to do so, you needed to get away from the cops, which I distinctly remember Jeff giving me shit because they were too nice.
They were.
They were Canadian cops.
Yeah.
No, I like it. Like, even Steven is a friendlier version of, like, Neil. Neil's cops and bad people are, like, fucking, you're in trouble. You're in a lot of trouble. So it was very shocking when Adam's like, they're like, hey, you pull over, or, like, something bad's pretty sure to happen here.
Well, and that's, I honestly think that's why I didn't really care that I killed Randy, because of how lenient Adam was with the characters leading up to that.
Well, and I think that's what's so fascinating about watching a group develop their playstyle together, because I think now, you know, y'all know I got fangs. I just don't use them the
same. Also, that was the first episode we had ever played with you ever, right?
Yes.
That's the other thing, Adam too. Episode. For the most part, I don't think any of us really knew what type of GM you were. We didn't know, because especially me and Jeff, who had been playing with Neil up until that point, and a little bit of Steven, and Neil will just like kill you for breathing wrong. Like, he is super hardcore in that sense.
I don't think that's when I found out that Adam is a man to be feared. I brought this up on many shows before, but there is one particular moment in Swan Song where Adam had us go to a dinner in which we were fucked from the moment we walked in that door. And I was like, holy shit, man. Like, I've never again will I.
When was that?
Let me one up you with a story from Neil. Just homage to Neil and a lot of people in chat. Neil had us go to a dinner where literally we were supposed to die.
Yeah.
Like, we were actually supposed to die.
As a group.
Jen triple critted the back of a guy to cut off his arm and have it bleed out on the floor. Triple crit. It was the only way. He was level 9. We were level 3 or 4. I die. I'm on the ground. I do this, like, heroic jump over a table. He, like, swats me on the ground. I'm dead. And then someone walked over and healed me, and they didn't notice, and I stood up, and I triple critted the guy in the back, and then that's how we got out. Neil was like, I'm going to be honest with you guys. That thing you did 2 episodes ago, you're supposed to die here. They're both they're like 3 times as high of a level as you guys. It's not possible. Oh. We're like, Neil, what the fuck? It's like, big 20, bro. Like, you can't do that. He's like, oh, yeah, you're supposed to die. You can't disrespect a king or some shit. And we're like, what the fuck?
So that's kind of where me and Jeff were coming from. So we didn't really know what Adam was going to, like, was he going to be really hardcore? Was he going to be, I didn't expect, and I pushover is not the word I want to use, but I think that's the word that Jeff was using in the episode.
Yeah. Canadian.
I mean, and that's a thing. So if you're going to be tuning in to Swan Song, and maybe you're used to watching other GMs at work, I've said this a couple of times during the course of this show and Mirror Shades. For me, character death is like the least interesting way to make a PC feel like the universe is out to get them.
Right.
I want to make you suffer. And
right.
If I can make the player suffer. That much better.
I think that actually happened in episode 3. We're kind of getting off what you were talking about, Higgins, but I feel like that episode that occurred in episode 3 where Pi came into the show and Wheat had like this really hard decision on like, do we want to bring this thing back to life?
Yeah, do we unbreak
or do we just let this thing go off and just let it be?
Yeah,
which is interesting. So that's a weird.
Well, I think well, let's talk a little bit more about your characters, and then we can maybe go through some of the important NPCs that have made their way through this universe. Because I definitely
think we gotta stay on target.
Episode 3 and the arc therefrom has definitely changed the tenor of the show for sure.
The tenor of the show has really been the same.
Get out of here!
Damn!
Wow!
Damn! If anyone knows a new PC, let me know.
JP's taking applications
for replacing Steven.
So Higgs, the thing is, I think that what we're getting, and people ask me this in the Q&A constantly, like just constantly, they're like, is JP a super genius or a total moron? I don't understand.
The character or me?
Like, are you just, it's like, is Higgs, and people don't know. People are like.
Well, a lot of people think they're one and the same. I feel like. And I finish your statement, and then I'll say.
All I was going to say was we see these things that happen where, like, there have definitely been times where Higgs is like A+ on top of everything, and we're like, oh, this is like where you're conning. I feel like in playing Higgs the way that you do, there's this kind of Schrodinger's con going on where at sometimes it feels so deep that we don't even know if you know what the hell you're doing. Yeah. Or there are episodes where people are like, Adam and JP have been planning this for 6 months. Like, it's just no way it could have been this perfect. Yep. So,
and that's never happened before. So
no, and that's, I mean, I think of all the at least as far as that stuff goes, as far as the overarching kind of like concepts of the universe, I think that you and I have probably had the most conversations about things that just were true from the beginning. But I think most people will point to seeing Higgs as less the sort of bumbling yokel and more the kind of mover behind the scenes was with the introduction of Luminary, right? And with that sort of that side plot. So, I mean, that's something that at the time we were very hush-hush about, and it was a really great reveal kind of very slowly. But so where did that come from for you? Like that idea that Higgs' con goes so deep that he belongs to this kind of like Illuminati.
I mean, I feel like that was another Randy moment where I was, there's a lot of times in pretty much any character that I play where I'm just like, I'm bored.
Yeah.
Like I want to do something fucking cool that'll change the game a little bit. And that's kind of where that came from. And that happened. I don't know what episode around that was where I literally messaged you and said, hey, what if I'm part of like this crazy fucking thing? And I obviously, like, the rest of the group doesn't know anything about it. And we haven't really revealed too much about it to this day. It's very topical.
Yeah, I think we saw Luminary a bit around, like, it was around episode, like, in the early 20s or, like, late 20 teens.
Or something, yep.
Yeah.
So we Maybe so. Yeah, I'm trying. It was 26.
Yeah, so for folks not familiar, obviously, which was the kind of whole purpose for doing this, so Luminary is an organization that Higgs belongs to that we've seen bits and pieces of. There have been meetings in which some characters are present. We've made it clear that characters we met before are part of this organization as well. But there's also a bunch of holes, too, still yet to fill. So you were saying, JB, that was just the product of you being
of boredom. I feel like up until that point, like, Higgins had a place in the ship, but it wasn't, like, he didn't really have motive. And then with that in mind, like, all of the things that had led up to that point had a reason. And I could tie them all into that reason pretty, like, with a nice bow. And some of that stuff has not even really been revealed yet, I guess. Yeah. But like pretty much every action that I've taken up until that point has a reason. Even Randy has a reason. It's never come up. And so I think that was just something that was cool that I did with the character, and that's kind of how I play. Because up until then, like, he was just kind of an asshole, and that's all he was.
Well, what I thought was interesting about, and lots of people have asked, and people still ask me about the whole like Randy moment, like, because you portrayed Higgs as being kind of a bumbling yokel up to that point, it was like, you know, haha, I'm not really the captain. I'm the captain, and I had to get these other people who are more legitimate than me to help me, like, do these things. And then with Randy, you were like, nah, fuck this. And it became, like, a very serious thing. And suddenly Higgs had, like, seized control of the momentum of that moment.
Right.
And I think that's when, and it happened pretty early, but that's when we started to see there's these two sides, and we're seeing more and more of that.
Yeah, as and that's honestly, yeah, for me, in terms of playing the character, that's the most fun parts are where I can't be that bumbling idiot and I have to be serious for a second. Perfect example is like any conversation with the Illuminati is fun. Anything that's like with Pi that has happened where it's a pretty serious conversation, it's a one-on-one. The conversation with Prosper and
any conversation that involved laser pistols.
Yeah, like that was something that prior to that episode, me and Steven had no idea was going to happen.
Yep.
And then we kind of just told each other like, yeah, I guess let's just play this out. Like, do whatever you want. I'll do whatever I want. And both characters came out of that still alive, which I was not expecting.
Surprisingly enough.
I think I went into that as a player wanting Higgins to kill Prosper.
That's what I expected to happen.
And he rolled really bad, and Prosper rolled really, really well.
Yeah. Well, also, Adam, like, because Prosper was a warrior, and like the thing that warriors get to do is ignore like an important bit of damage once. Right.
Yeah.
So like Adam was kind of like, okay, you're passed out, you wake up and Higgs is over you.
Right.
And you can act. Yeah. So that was what saved Prosper. That was really fun for me too, because like Higgs and Prosper, like, people apparently ask this question a lot in the Q&A of like the prep for this episode of like, why did Prosper leave?
Right.
And it felt to me, as like me, Steven, that like Higgs and Prosper had like opposing goals for what they wanted to do with the Swan Song and with Pi and like with the direction of what the ship was going to be doing. And ultimately Prosper lost, which makes sense because Higgs is the captain. But like, like Prosper didn't want to be involved in like this weird sort of like, you know, space piracy kind of thing, and like Higgs with his crazy ideas about like the reality TV show and everything. And Prosper was like, well, I've had these weird crises of faith from meeting the creature that I consider to be a literal god and trying to deal with that. It sounds like shit is really going badly at home as far as like how people are relating to the religion as I understand it. And I'm just not getting along with the captain. So that was a really great episode because it was like a moment for almost Prosper to stand up and say, no, hang on, no.
Yeah.
Enough.
Yeah.
What I think has been so interesting in the arc of the show in general, and this I think speaks to sort of the way that JP, the way you play Higgs and Higgs' sort of place, is that nothing ends up being static for very long, right? Like, and we talk about this.
That's by design, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. And we talk about this early on, where the ship is really the core of the show, and if we lose Victor or we see Prosper or Mr. Sakarian leave the crew, it doesn't mean that we're not still exploring the same kind of space. We just get to see it from a different angle, which is what makes the kinds of party conflict that have come up feel like doable in this setting. Like, no one is so integral to the continuation of the sort of reality of the show that we can't say, okay, well, this character is diametrically opposed to someone else, and we'll just have a battle of wills. And and in some alternate universe, Prosper and Higgs, it didn't go that way, and Prosper became captain of the ship, and there's a bunch of other stuff that happened there.
Right.
So, I mean, I think, like, as far as Higgs goes, it's interesting because, you know, what you can expect, I think, from Higgs are these alternating moments of, at least in my experience playing the game, and I'd love everybody else's input on this, but Higgs tends to provide either like the really driving stuff that tends to be like about the universe at large and like the kind of big plots in the series. Like, there have been very serious times, like conversations that Higgs has had with NPCs or with Pi or whatever, that might not make sense if you directly compare them to the Higgs we get otherwise, which is the kind of bumbling, grenade-throwing, like, cowboy, right? And I think that that's what's so fascinating, is that you're playing this character that, depending on, because the show is sort of so cinematic in nature, depending on who's watching, like, depending on what viewpoint we have on Higgs, he's very different.
Yeah.
So,
I also feel like I play him differently depending on who I'm talking to. Like,
Oh, yeah.
I would think I play... Sakarian was a perfect example. Like, I was always pretty serious with Sakarian for the most part. But if you compare it to like Piani or Victor, it was, I think Higgs doesn't really care about their perspective of him.
Yeah.
But Higgins really cared about Sakaarian, and that was kind of the reason why.
Why?
Well, Sakaarian was Higgs' bodyguard, right?
Yeah, and he had done things in order to allow me to continue the con. Like, that was kind of the mindset of how sense. I looked at that. And that's why, up until a point, before he left, I was expecting him, I was going to bring him into the Illuminati. And I was going to have him as kind of like a partner in that. But he went his own way, and maybe he is or maybe he isn't. I don't really know the status of that, but...
Well, it's been interesting seeing your relationship with Piani change since Sakaarian left the crew, because I feel like there was a little while where Higgs was kind of like grasping at straws, because Sakaarian felt to me like Higgs's backup guy, right? Like, okay, if the con goes wrong, if I get caught,
he's the fail safe, yeah.
Yeah, if people with guns come after me, well, I'll hide behind Mr. S. He'll take care of me.
And that's another example is when I wanted to do the reality show. And Sakaarian was totally against it. I think Jeff was also against it as a player, as he just didn't want to go down that route. And that was kind of like a boundary test for me, both as a player and as a character, to see like if you guys would let me change the game again in that sense. Because that would have been a pretty crazy thing to pull off in like an actual game element for Adam to have a TV crew follow us around or whatever.
Yep.
And since you guys basically voted in-game, which was really you guys voting out-of-game, on your own thoughts on it, we just didn't go that route.
Because it was both.
I feel like if I would have gone that route, you guys would have just killed me.
Well, like that was part of what like Prosper was like entirely incapable of participating in, especially like because of his character background as basically a secret agent working for this ultra religious organization. Like he could never participate in something like that. So like even though it would have been cool and like a weird direction to take the show. We're like now we're all of a sudden like a reality TV crew.
For folks again, for folks who didn't see that or are not familiar with what we're talking about, there was a point at which Higgs had started recording stuff. There's a piece of equipment in the game that's like a basically a field of like nano cameras that record everything that happens around the person wearing them.
Yeah.
And the plan was to create a time delay reality TV show about the crew of the Swan Song. So we're going to get real meta and have Swan Song be about a show that was about a show.
And the entire reason I wanted that is so we could just have a lot of money. I just wanted a lot of money in game.
Well, and that goes back to the whole, because this came up in the Q&A, was like what is sort of driving the characters, and it's debt, right? You're in debt a lot of money and in debt such that if someone were to investigate it, if you stop paying the bills, they're going to find out that Victor's dead.
Yeah,
because I'm
the owner of the ship.
Right? Victor Kovacs is still paying the bills. So
the reasoning behind that was because I didn't want my name on the ship or something, right?
Yeah. It's because you needed a legit businessman to
and that was
to
Victor
put their name, and it was Victor. Yeah.
We figured that out in episode one, if I remember right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So Victor is dead. There's this huge conglomerate corporation to which you owe, a million plus credits. And the plan was to just supplement that. And right now you'll be like taking jobs and trying to, just trying to keep that debt down because you're all kind of accountable for it now.
Yeah.
Because again, the whole sector runs on money. There's no like universal police force to protect you. If you are in trouble, you need money to save yourself from that trouble.
Yep.
And so that's kind of the driving force. And I guess the reality TV show, though that particular arc, and well, when we start talking about NPCs and stuff, that particular arc allowed me to play Vince Pollard, which was
I had a lot of fun with Vince Pollard too. It was good.
One of my favorite NPCs, like the producer that you were trying to coax, and it was like the party
drug fueled producer.
You said coax.
Cokes. Yeah. So,
for those of you don't know, we're talking about cocaine, the drug that you snort.
Yeah. That was fun.
So, well, I mean, let's talk a bit about, I want to talk about Jeff, about Alpharius, because I think Alpharius, Alpharius is the most recent addition to the crew. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm starting to feel like, especially in the last couple of episodes, you're getting a better handle on like where he's at, because often what people will do when they make characters, and I think this is sort of what happened with Alpharius, is they'll pick like a thing, like I have one thing or two things that I know about this character, and then we'll let the rest develop as a response to the universe around them. So, I mean, tell us a little bit about Alpharius, like what's Alpharius kind of about, and why did you choose to make that character that way?
Yeah, there's some interesting kind of reasons why he is the way he is. Like, first and foremost, I have a tradition, but really it's like I like to play things a certain way, as everyone knows, and a lot of my characters end up being kind of that guy. So Vincent Longbourn, Sicarian, why am I forgetting his name? Black? What was his name? Victarion.
Victarion, yeah.
Yeah, Jesus. I forget him. He was cool. He was really cool. But they all end up being kind of, you know, leader-oriented, warrior class, kind of does the right thing, but ultra-aggressive and violent, so it ends up kind of blurring the lines a little bit. So with Alpharius, obviously I wanted to shore up a little bit of the differences. Like, we needed someone that's a gun on our team, otherwise, I mean, we saw what happened when Higgs tried to kill Prosper. So we would be in a lot of trouble if we ever had to do some combat. So there was that, needed to be a pilot, okay. But then with some of my characters across these shows, I try to actually push myself to be a little bit different and have a character and something different. So some of my orcs that I've done have been, like, I played a really dumb orc, and that was fun because, you know, there's the, like, this is what I would want to do. This is what I think would push the game forward. But this is what a dumb person would do. Let's do that. And with Alpharius, I wanted him to have kind of I'm sure we'll talk about Sicarian, but I was just absolutely in love with everything about Sicarian. So I just really like the idea of a full story arc, background, something meaningful other than just, you know, here's a piece of paper, now you understand everything about him. So that's kind of where the speech thing came out, and that's where his whole tick, and that was comedic and fun, and it was also fun for me because it was challenging. But it's kind of interesting because I've also pushed the boundaries of my characters a few times into places that are not so good. Like, Victarion Black actually originally was going to be a gigantic asshole who yelled at people. And that ended up being really bad because I yell at Jen kind of a lot. And if I have a character that does that, it looks really bad. So he immediately, that went away. Like, that was one episode. Then it's like, nope, not going to do that.
Yeah.
And with Alpharius, he has a lot of voices. And it is built into his character that he is kind of remade. But when he's nervous or flustered at all, like, he isn't able to communicate very well. And it was kind of interesting because, like, that was funny, but it was also too dominant. And I didn't want every show to be about how, like, what am I going to say next? And, you know, how is that going to change the dynamics? So I've been toning it down. But I also built into his lore that, like, a big part of the reason why he's doing that is because he's more common and he's more in place. So I felt like it gels kind of nicely with him as a character as well. But that's just to give you guys an idea of, like, not all my characters are like, this is what they are, pushing forward, nobody can do anything about it. A lot of it is like, I want to challenge myself, I want to be different, but at the same time, I don't want it to be all about me, which, you know, I can tend to, I don't, like, intend for that to happen, but I can be a little dominant, so that's what happens.
I will say one of my favorite Alpharius moments was when he tried to broker the deal because Higgs let him. And that's honestly... God. There, in terms of, like, how I play Higgs, and this is how I've done in a lot of the other episodes, is I'm on so many shows, and I usually take the role of, like, being the one that does a lot of the captaining, kind of the Higgs of the show. And in that particular point, I was like, this would be pretty funny if Alpharius was the one in charge of this, and then Jeff knocked it out of the park with how fucking funny it was.
And that's, I mean, this is a broader subject, but, like, that was actually made so incredible because of the double fucking ones. Like,
yes.
Yeah, the rolls made that funny as shit.
Seriously failed with the dice.
This is a fun game, and role-playing is so fun, and it's an honor to do with you guys, which is incredible, but, like, so many times the dice have just absolutely been, like, and now we're in epic category. And, like, that's a good example. And, again, I hope we talk more about it later, but, like, just the whole Sicarian duel, that was improbable, and that was not supposed to go the way it did at all.
Yeah.
But history was kind of, like, a legend was born because of our and fucking Jesus, man. Like, it just rolled out that way, and then the story kind of followed. It even goes back further, like, the pirate ship, that was a moment where...
Yeah.
My characters, they're me. I want them to live. And that's why when JP was like, let's do it, a reality show, my character, but also me, was a little bit like, no, that sounds terrible, we'll die. it's a part of me that makes these decisions. I think that's the same for everyone.
Right.
But that pirate ship was a little bit of a, like, all right, it's early on, this is crazy, I'm supposed to be the bodyguard guy, so let's take some huge risks. And then because of the dice, which consistently throughout that entire episode, it told exactly the story that if Adam pulled me aside, he's like, all right, Jeff, how do you want this to go down? I'd be like, okay.
here's what I want
first,
to have happen.
Yeah.
I stab this guy, then I jump through the window, and I make the, you know, like all this, like, Jesus, the dice did it for us. So
to echo that point, I feel like Higgins has had every role that I would really care about go 100% in his favor.
Yeah.
He's always rolled either a 20 or a 12 plus on anything critical, except for maybe like one or two things.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's always been a great roll.
It's amazing how like different people have such different luck.
Yeah.
I know.
It's crazy.
I mean, yeah, like
it's in Warhammer too. I roll really well in Warhammer, actually.
Human pattern recognition is such that we start to see patterns where maybe none exist, and it shapes the mythology of the characters in play, right? Like, I mean, Mr. Sicari in episode what, 2 or 3, when you boarded the pirate ship and killed everyone on board.
Yeah.
You're not like, it's not like Mr. Sicarian was that great at anything. Nope. Like he was just a first level warrior, right? And there were other warriors on board fighting you. You just happened to roll really well and plan for making rolls when you would have an opportunity to do well. But what's cool is that there are these things. So when people refer to, like, you know, the cook or the chef or whatever, that's all from that. We build these legends out of these moments of randomness.
That was funny too, because that was all like, we were trying to maneuver to either get them to leave or something like that. Like, we're not a threat at all, or get me in position so I could shoot them freely. That's where the whole cook thing even came from.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah.
That's nobody. That's just the cook. Oh, yeah.
So Alpharius is a character. I just wanted to sort of talk a little bit about his sort of place in the world, because what's been interesting for me in the last couple of episodes is that, so Andoni is a big part of the campaign's background. Your first mission was there. It's where ostensibly like Pi and the Warmind came from. But what I think is really interesting is that now we have this character who could not have existed at the beginning of the show, right? Like we're building and reacting to each other as we move through the universe based on the things that we're building together. Alpharius is a survivor of the planetary destruction of Andoni, which wouldn't have happened had it not been for events that we saw on screen earlier in the campaign, which is what I really think is cool and makes this feel like a living universe, because we're seeing things that matter come up out of the things that are different. There are all of these points throughout the show where it could have gone in this like totally other direction and the universe would be completely different.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're going to go into a break in a second, but one thing I want to share too, which I unfortunately don't have a follow-up to what you just said, so it sounds kind of rude.
No, it's okay. Go ahead. Yeah. I mean, I was just pointing out that that's a thing that's possible, and it shows the kind of breadth of show we've got so far.
For sure.
That is cool. One of the things I liked about kind of the evolution of the voice thing too, obviously I've been scaling it back a little bit, but like one of the places where I really was tripping up the speech and I like how it functions was when we visit that, well, when we kind of had a brush with Warmind at, you know, Speak of the Devil, and you did a great job, Adam, of like not necessarily like cramming in the face of Alpharius, like, here's your nemesis, but like it kind of subtly appeared, and he like lost all control of speaking. And actually, and this is all mediums of entertainment for me, that I really seek like emotional experiences. I think that's where a lot of meaning is. So Anna's always like, why are you watching depressing and sad movies and stuff like that? It's like, well, a lot of those, you feel sad, but it's like it's a transportation to sadness that's not your own. So it's kind of, fun's a weird word, but it's like it's an experience. You're like, oh, I feel sad for these people and for the story, and I feel emotional about this. Well, the same thing happens in role playing. That's why it's been such a fucking amazing experience over the years, and Swan Song has been a huge catalyst for a lot of that. But like when I was really stuttering and having a tough time speaking, I in the back of my mind too, I'm like, you know, don't overact this, because you don't want in any way, shape, or form to be offending people that actually do suffer from speech impediments. I'm very conscientious of that. But at the same time, I'm portraying a character that literally cannot physically speak because he's so distraught with what's happening. And also, he's a cyborg.
Right.
So that was actually kind of an emotional experience for me. Like, I was getting frustrated. I was feeling sad. And I was feeling upset. And it was purely off this completely fictitious character that we've designed and made in a completely fictitious situation. So I was very thankful that we do this thing and there is this meaning and that it can actually do that selfishly for me, but I also think for a lot of people this is a fun experience too, that way too. So
Yeah, and I think that the characters that you're portraying are in a lot of ways and become more and more as the time we spend with them, they're very human feeling. They have flaws. They act in ways that are, as a player of a game, you might consider suboptimal, but what our real goal here is to make compelling fiction. And to talk more about flawed characters with mental problems, we'll talk to Steven, but let's take a break first.
All right, let's take a break. We still got 2 hours left here on the recap episode, I think. We're going to talk to Steven about his characters, and we'll come back and also take Adam. Are we going to start diving into the questions list?
Yeah, we can talk a little bit about some NPCs, and then we'll take a crack at the questions.
Cool. All right, we'll do just that. We'll be right back, guys. More roleplay coming up. We're out for this. We'll see you guys in just a bit.